sit back, relax, and raise a glass. For spirits coming from the past, sip on salt while your skin falls with your pre-haunting host having a ball. Your favorite ghouls, gather the others, no hesitating. The moment's approaching, it's now time to sing. Hogs and Hogs, Hogs and Hogs, crackle and hand and fill to the top. Hogs and Hogs, Hogs and Hogs, this is your podcast and it's called Hogs and Hogs.
No matter where in the world you're joining us from, welcome back to our realm. This is the Haunts and Hops podcast. We cover all things paranormal while sipping on heavenly craft beer from Tavor. Follow us on all social media at Haunts and Hops. Johnny LaQuasto here. But let's get to the stars of the show. She is a veteran paranormal investigator, former team member of Ghost Hunters on A&E, a wealth of knowledge, and most likely an IPA in her hand. Find her at Ashley Trobe because she is none other than the brilliant Ashley Trobe.
How could you call me out like that? How could you do that to me?
Because we love IPAs. We're not ashamed of it.
If the shoe fits, you must acquit. I don't know.
I am drinking IPA. I'm drinking, and thanks to Vore, they sent me just a wealth of things. It's Astronaut Ice Cream. It's a double dry hopped double IPA with lactose, which usually I'm not into double IPAs. It's just... I think it's age
a lot
at this point. I think I'm just getting too old to enjoy doubles. But this one's really good. I was pleasantly surprised. And it's only 8%. Usually doubles are a little bit heavier. And maybe that's, I think, I put a stigma to it that when I drink doubles, I get too drunk. So.
And right away, they get points on the label alone.
Oh, my gosh. I know. It's got this cool astronaut. And it's got eyes. Little astronaut.
And what brewing company is this?
Illuminated Brewworks. And that's the other thing I have to say about Tavor so far. They're sending me some really cool things that I've never heard of before. This is from Chicago. So It's kind of nice knowing, like, you know, when you're into beer and you live in California, you kind of hit all the main points. You know Lagunitas, you know Firestone, you know, like, everything. All of these beers that are just so common, and so to be able to get these beers that I haven't had before has kind of been a treat. It's been really exciting to do new things.
Trick or treat.
Yeah, for beer lovers like us, it's super cool to realize, like, how huge the craft beer movement truly is across the country, not just on the coast. It's really everywhere. Yeah. And well, speaking of being everywhere, she is certified in paranormal investigation and cryptozoology, lifelong connection to the paranormal, and most certainly does not have an IPA in her hand. She's Anastasia Washington.
Hey, every once in a while, I take one for the team and I try one, and then I make this face.
You're such a good person, though.
Right? I mean, it's my charity for the moment.
You're a gift.
It's my gift to the world. I am drinking Lateralis. Cocoa and coconut imperial vanilla stout. And it is a 11% alcohol by volume, and it's from Big Lake, Minnesota. Yeah, Big Lake, Minnesota. I actually had to look up what MN meant.
Wow. Are you serious? Anna.
As she takes a sip, she is deadly serious. What a question. What did you think MN may have meant? Were you thinking Montana?
Yeah.
It's happened to me.
I wanted to say Montana, and I was like, I should check before I say something. So it's Minnesota, you guys, just in case you see it.
Look, who wouldn't want to take a long weekend in Big Lake, Montana? Let's be honest.
Right? Especially with beers that taste like this. It's really nice. It does have like a slight coffee aftertaste, which a lot of stouts do, which I don't feel like you have to have, but it's okay. I don't like coffee. I don't like IPAs and I don't like coffee.
That's so weird when you like stouts and porters.
Not like all stouts have to have coffee based.
I am aware.
11%.
I was going to say, just an 11% tall boy is a really solid choice.
Yeah. Good night, Anastasia. I just discovered.
It is one second.
And I'm so sad about this. Every year I buy Woo Stout, right? Which is the wheaten beer that they come out with every year from Stone. And it's always like a geek collaborative, and it's always amazing. It's always so exciting. And I just discovered I can't drink any of the ones I have. I've been saving it for a vertical, and I'll never get to have it.
Why?
So they're all brewed with pecans, which means a lot, not all, but a lot of stouts I can no longer have, including the new Black is Beautiful, which I was so excited to get because proceeds are going to, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement. Can't drink it. Can't even buy it.
I can.
I'm going to continue on the IPA train. I have a Wild Leap Brewing Company gift called the ETA Transcontinental IPA. I figure since our special guest has investigated all across the country, why not have an IPA called the Transcontinental IPA? 7.5%. It's got a buffalo on the front, so I'm into that.
I like it.
And it's from Wild Leap Brewing Company in LaGrange, Georgia. Their catchphrase is, born in the sky, brewed on the ground, and that's the way you should do it.
You have a catchphrase on yours? I want a catchphrase.
We get catchphrases now?
But while we're talking about beer, if you want to get hooked up by Tavor, first off, find the app at Tavor. And if you use the code HAUNTS10, HAUNTS10, once you hit $20 in your crate, you will get an additional $10 credit just from listening to the show. So use the code HAUNTS10 with Tavor. Trust me, we couldn't speak more highly about Tavor. They're so incredible. You're going to get beer you've never heard of, and you're going to get a chance to enjoy it, which is amazing. Speaking of enjoying, give us a call, 818-660-6191. Leave us your paranormal experience if you've ever experienced one. We will play it on the show. So shout out to our phone number and shout out to Tavor.
Oh, also, if you've experienced cryptids or aliens, we would love to hear that as well on that line. Just use it. Call us.
Please just
do it. Call us. 818. just call us. 818-660-6191. And thank you to Tavor. With that said, let's bring in, before we get to the supernatural scoop, we're so excited to have our special guest on. Let's bring her in right now. So Anastasia, please take it away.
Yes. Today we are lucky enough to have Christy Sumner from Soul Sisters Paranormal in your neck of the woods, Johnny. She is from Florida, and we met on the internet like normal people do. I thought she'd be perfect for the show because she has a all female, and most of them are related to you, I'm understanding, paranormal group that is doing some great investigating. So I figured she would be a perfect guest for us. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
I like your intro saying that you met on the internet, because immediately when I hear that, I'm just like, oh, so you don't know yet if they're a serial killer is what you're telling me. Like, that's my first thought whenever, anytime somebody was like, oh, I met them on the internet. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, we bring that up on the second episode. When you bring me back as the next guest, I'll talk about, you know, that part of me.
Thank you. That's what I want.
That's our sneak peek. That's our sneak peek right now. But I do know, you actually are drinking a beer right now.
I am. I feel, you know, like I kind of let down the team here, but I am drinking a Bud Light in the spirit of the conversation, but there's nothing very grand about it, except it's a Bud Light Platinum, and it's cold.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What does a Platinum mean?
Triple
filter. I think
filter.
It's higher alcohol.
I believe it is, yes. But it, like I said, it's good and it's cold, and here we are.
Listen, I had a Corona once on air, and I will never live it down.
Just about to say that.
Right? I've even drank IPAs to try to make up for it.
Oh, and it didn't give you any brownie points?
I mean, like one, like a half a brownie, like not even a full brownie.
It's a tough crowd, tough
the
crowd.
Catchphrase on, the catchphrase on Bud Light just says, sorry.
Wah, wah, wah.
It's like, you know.
Well, if you're listening to this right now, go to, while you're listening, you could multitask. We all do that in 2020. Go to soulsistersparanormal.com. It's such a really amazing website. I was entertaining myself, like, which sounds weird, but in a good way. I was entertaining myself to the website because there are so many good investigations that you have, Christy, so many great videos. It's soulsistersparanormal.com. You got to check it out if you're listening to this because you have such a great team. I believe, what, three of you are sisters, and then you have two associates as well, correct?
Correct. So it's myself, my twin sister, our younger sister, and then two female family friends. And we started in 2013, and we've been going all over the country ever since.
And how does it work working with your sisters? I'm just going to dig in. I have two sisters who I love. Thank you for listening to the show if you are. But, you know, there's dynamics sometimes, and, you know.
There absolutely are. For me, it's absolutely amazing. My sisters are my best friends. So to get to experience these locations with them, you know, that's really why we started this group. On the flip side, you know, if we have an argument, nobody gets kicked off the team because, you know, we're blood. You know, like I said, other than that.
It's just going to make dinner really weird.
It makes it awkward.
Like all holidays.
Christmas cards may be different. You know, we'll say sincerely rather than love ya. You know? So that could, you know, it could cause an issue, but no, overall it is an absolute blast. I couldn't imagine two people that I want to investigate more with than my twin and my younger sister.
How did this become a family thing? Because my family is not into the paranormal at all. I don't think they care at all about any of it. So it's really interesting to hear that your whole family does. Like, how did that happen?
Well, it actually started as a girls' weekend. We are separated, you know, by miles. And so every year we would take a girls' trip and go to different locations. And we had a family friend that sat on the board of the West Virginia State Penitentiary. And so he knew we were planning a girls' trip. And he said, why don't y'all come up to Moundsville and stay the night in the prison? So we decided to do that. And that was our very first investigation. And it was extremely rudimentary. We had a couple of night vision video cameras, a couple of digital cameras, and a couple of voice recorders. But we left with that experience, having captured what we felt was very compelling evidence, that we decided that we wanted to formalize a team. You know, we wanted to get a name. We wanted to get a look and a feel and a professional presence about us. And that's just what we did. And it really started with that investigation at the West Virginia State Penitentiary.
So what you're saying is prison changed you.
It did. You know, once you get in and experience life behind bars, it's there's no going back after that. Life does not become normal.
I feel that.
I would like to note to all my friends out there, that is a girls' trip that I can truly get down with. Take note.
Anastasia, we have done girls' trips like that, okay?
We have, me and you. I'm just saying, I'm noting all these other people that are like, let's go on a cacao retreat.
Yes. No, for us, it was definitely a sense of exploration with regard to the paranormal.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's really
and
cool.
What's cool about, you mentioned, you know, your very first trip was rudimentary equipment. But one of the things I love about your team is you have everything now. Like, I watched the Ma Barker video, which I want to talk about, but you don't leave any stone unturned. When you guys go somewhere, you have every corner covered to where even if you're not in a certain area, you're going to pick up things. And that's the best part of, you know, that's the best kind of investigation you could truly have, is when you know you're not going to miss anything.
That's true. And it is a catch 22 for us. We feel like if we have some of these experiences, some of them may be only a once in a lifetime shot. You know, if we go to West Virginia State Penitentiary or Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary or, you know, the Villisca Axe Murder House, you know, there's no telling when we'll actually get the chance to go back and do that. So we want to take full advantage of the time and the opportunity that we have. So we did feel that we wanted to, our style, we wanted it to incorporate that type of setup where we would have the corners covered, where we would have voice recorders left stationary to run through the night. Because if we couldn't be in a location, we still wanted that covered because we felt just our very presence could, you know, evoke some type of a response, even if we weren't in the area.
I think it's funny because the other catch 22 is having everything and being able to record everything means you have to redo that same investigation over and over when you're reviewing your evidence, which takes forever.
You're absolutely right.
Catch 22 with all investigations. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked recently, I was like, oh, like, is it exciting? And I was like, the first time. And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, well, because then I have to listen to it on audio, and then I have to listen to it on audio with video, and then I have to listen to it. And it's just you keep reliving that same night quite a few times before you finally get to move on past that investigation.
Yeah, you're right. And that is the rub, you know, because when we go on these investigations, obviously we'll put it on social media. Hey, we're at Villisca, or we're at the Lizzie Borden house. And the next morning, everybody's, well, what'd you capture? What'd you get? So, you know, the popular television shows have done a great job in highlighting that we're out there, but they've done a disservice, I feel, in that the instant gratification isn't there for our audience. That's not our style. I mean, we could go in and film it in a live type of way. But for us, we feel like we would miss key evidence because a lot of the investigations that we do, the EVPs or the shadow figures that we capture are captured on our stationary equipment. And so we made the decision that we wanted to take the time to review everything. So Ashley, to your point, it is very laborious to go through the audio and the video. And, you know, we all wear body cameras, so we have a timestamp of where everybody's at. So, you know, to watch those clips as well, it takes us probably about 2 months to get from investigation to an actual video release.
A lot of people don't know this, but with ghost hunters, like, we'd be on site for about a week, you know, from first arriving, getting to the hotel, checking the whole place out first, doing the investigations, like everything all together, we'd be there for a week. And then that doesn't include all of the time that we had to spend reviewing the evidence. And, you know, the stuff takes a lot longer. I think that's why there's always been that stigma with the whole weekend warrior, where it's people mm-hmm. that show up for the experience and want to have mm-hmm. fun and then never really do anything with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, so people, you know, when they hear it, they're just like, oh, investigating is so fun. That must be so amazing. And it's like, it is. Mm-hmm. The you know, the evidence we get is really cool. But, man, it can get boring sometimes.
Well, it's a waiting game. It's a waiting game. And and you don't sometimes even know what you've gotten, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right. So you have to go through all this information and it's like data, and then you can find some gold nuggets in there sometimes.
and that's the great part about it. You know, it is a rush when you're listening to audio and you've been listening to just straight static for 7 hours, and then you get this amazing EVP that you cannot explain. That to me is a rush, and it makes me want to listen to the next 7 hours. So, you know, that is the fun part about what we do.
Yep.
And that's where I want to thank you as well for what you guys do on the website is, not only do you post what could be evidence of paranormal entities and everything, you do a full video presentation. Mm-hmm. You know, you give a history of why you're there. And that's great because a lot of people that are watching the videos, they might not know about the Villisca Murder House. So why are they there? Why are they at the St. Augustine Lighthouse? And you give a good 3-5 minute presentation, like a video presentation that sums it all up. And by the time you're finish watching that, you're like, oh, now I'm ready for this. And then you go right into the investigation. So I couldn't recommend your website more highly. It is so thoroughly entertaining. If you have any interest in the paranormal, and I know that's not an easy thing to do, that takes a lot of work, but kudos because it's really cool.
Well, thank you, Johnny. I appreciate you saying that because, you know, that is our driving factor behind all of this. You know, even now in this day and age, you can go to Google, you can go to a book, you can go and read about the historical locations that we're visiting, but we actually try to give you that tactile experience. You know, what does it look like to walk through the Lizzie Borden house? Because once you know the history and then you see, well, these rooms are kind of compact. This stairway, you know, it's there. These rooms are very close. How did she get away with this? You know, when you start putting the location into context of the history and why it's important, that's the narrative that we want to put out there for Soul Sisters. Even if we went to a location and didn't find any evidence of paranormal, we would still produce a video highlighting that historical narrative and why we feel it's still important. Because, you know, like I said, we've been very fortunate to be able to travel these locations, but a lot of people aren't. And, you know, if we can highlight that or we can help pump some preservation dollars into that to preserve these locations, that's really what we're about. And that's what drives us.
That you remind me a lot of a friend of the show is Brandon Alves. Yeah. He is a friend of ours. And he is very similar, you know, history. He's a big history buff and he loves the history of locations. And so even when things don't turn out to be paranormal, which happens all the time, you know what I mean? Not every place is haunted.
Right.
But he wants to get that word out still. And so it's really fantastic. And I'm really happy to hear it because, you know, sometimes these investigations come up with nothing. And it really just turns out that instead of getting an investigation, we just had a really beautiful historical experience.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, I got to touch the doorknobs in the Lizzie Borden house and walk across the floor at Villisca, or, you know, stand in a cell at Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, or walk the lighthouse steps over and over and over. So, you know, there is, like I said, the history behind it to stand in these locations, that is a driving factor for us, as well as the research. And I know I do follow Brandon, so I know that he's very big into the research as well. Yeah. And, you know, that's what we really want to highlight also, because, I mean, as you all know, we're in the mainstream, we're considered a subculture. So in order to elevate us, you know, I felt it was extremely important, first and foremost, to be a professional looking group. So, you know, we go and we have our trademark, we have our logo, we have our theme music to really give that professional look and appeal. But then also we wanted to bring, as best as we could, legitimacy to what we do. And we feel that that research element is a part of that. You know, every member of the team holds an advanced degree. I have a PhD. My twin has a PhD. We have two JDs and a master's holder on the team. So we really do come at it with a research-minded approach to our investigation styles. You know, we try to control for all the environmental factors that we can. We put out there, you know, we're in this location where there's a train going by. And so if we capture something like that, we can rule out that it's not paranormal. So we actually do a lot of debunking. At the same time, we're trying to find things that are unexplainable.
Well, and that's such an important part of investigation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, all of us here want to find paranormal stuff happening everywhere, mm-hmm. but we also want to go in there with a little bit of discerning, like, deniability, like, skepticism. You know, like, skepticism is the best way, yeah. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, like, even with some of my experiences, like, when we were talking about the doll, I could explain it through, like, that the doll haunting that happened to me. I was like, I can explain it three or four different ways, maybe it's possible, but it's also possible that this, you know, and I think we have to look at it. And with all the research that you're doing, I think it's so on like par with all of the stuff that we always talk about, which is like respect, mm-hmm. going in there and investigating and knowing the history and knowing what kind of presence this, like, you know, like happened in this house or this home or this whatever. I think it's just a respect too. It's just a respect for whatever's there as well.
And you're absolutely right. You know, if you watch any of our videos, you will constantly hear us say, we want to tell your story. Will you allow us to tell your story? And mm-hmm. we feel that that's very important. We go in, I'm not saying that we're empathic. I mean, I do have my twin and we have that connection, but we don't claim to be empathic. But what we do go in with is a sense of empathy. We don't go in with bravado. We don't go in with provoking. We legitimately want to tell the history of the location and any stories that the paranormal entities may want to convey to us. And so we're very heavy on telling that and going in with that respect that you mentioned. Because if we go in with the mindset that these spirits were once human, you know, the very human experience is to be recognized, is to be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody wants to go through life unnoticed. And we feel that's the same way with spirits. So we go in with that mindset of actually approaching them on a one-on-one level, a one-to-one level. And so we're very big on trigger items, things that will be germane to the location or germane to the person that we're trying to connect with. And so we'll take trigger items that are designed to say, we acknowledge you. We know what you liked when you were human. We're going to give you that if we can. And, you know, if you can just give us a thank you. And we've been very successful with that.
And to follow that up, do you feel like having an all-female team is more conducive to getting reactions? Because, for example, Ashley, you've told us in the past about the visceral reactions you have gotten from a couple locations. We're not going to say what they called you, but when you happen to be more or less the only woman there.
But on the other end of the spectrum, me and Ashley had an experience where a ghost was only receptive to females. So, like...
And you're absolutely right. And that's a great question, Johnny. I do feel that we add a different element to that. And I do believe it is because we go in with that sense of empathy. You know, like I said, we don't go in with bravado. And I do think, especially when we're trying to connect with children, I do think that we get a different response than a male would. You know, we have had instances in prisons where, you know, we have our hair pulled or we have our pant leg tugged. And I do believe believe that it is because we're an all-female group. We actually, like I said, want to sit down and listen. And again, it does go back to that respect level, Anastasia, that you talked about. That is really what we try to do. For example, when we went to the West Virginia State Penitentiary the second time, you know, through our research, we found out that one of the prisoners there, his name was Red Snyder. And bad guy, he was in there for multiple murders, and he was the leader of the Aryan Brotherhood. And through our research, we found out that he liked smoking, and he liked Days of Our Lives when he was in prison. So they would wheel a television set in front of his cell every day, and they would let him watch Days of Our Lives. So what we did, and we're the first team to ever do this, I downloaded an episode of Days of Our Lives onto my laptop, and I've set it in the prison cell as a trigger item. So we let it run. We let it run through, about an hour and a half of the episode. I had a couple, let it run. And then when we walked back in there, it was like, yeah, I'll talk to you because you acknowledged me. And so we had some great EVPs. We had a great K2 session. And I really believe it was because we approached him we did our research and we approached him with what he liked, that he was being receptive to us.
Do you ever wonder what your trigger item is going to be?
sometimes we do. When we went to Fort Mifflin and we wanted to make contact with William Howe, the spirit of William Howe in the solitary confinement cell, we took items that we thought somebody in solitary confinement would want. We took, some bread, we took some water, and we took a cigarette. And when we went down there, if you haven't been to Fort Mifflin, Casemate 11 is a subterranean casemate. And it's small, it's about 6 feet underground. I would say comfortably five people could probably stand in there. And we had a video camera, a night vision video camera, and a laser grid in the doorway. It's the only entrance and exit to this room. And so there was two of us in there. And I said, we left you some water and cigarettes, and we captured a male voice saying, thank you. And it captured every piece of equipment we had running that night, captured that EVP. So again, I feel it's because we acknowledged him and what he was going through, his suffering, and gave him things that would, kind of mitigate against that. So we were very fortunate to capture that EVP.
I was just going to say, it makes you think. It's kind of funny. It's like, okay, of all the things in the world that you think about during apocalypse, in apocalypse in general, water, bread, cigarettes, of course, now toilet paper, apparently, it just kind of really makes you think, like, what are the things that you really, truly want and or are craving?
Sorry, Johnny. I just like, what would summon me? Like, I feel like it would be like chocolate cake and beer, but
So to follow up your point earlier about speaking to a guy who was the leader of the Aryan Brotherhood, gosh, I mean, how difficult is it to, if you're trying to connect with that specific human being, and obviously you have Days of Our Lives playing, how hard is it to come up with stuff to say? Because I mean, to me, if I'm talking to someone who's the leader of the Aryan Brotherhood, like I would not want to be catering or polite to him because he was a terrible human being. So how do you navigate that? What do you say?
Well, I mean, for us, and you're absolutely right. You don't want to say, for us personally, we don't want to say, hey, you sucked as a human. That's really not how we go in and approach it. We want to make contact. And then, the things that we say are such like, did you actually commit these murders? Did you murder this person? Or, did you have your best friend he had his best friend in the cell next to him murdered? Did you do these things? And we were getting responses to that. Different things like what was prison life like? We got some responses to that. Essentially, it was just trying to make that connection on a human level, I guess, not so much on a prisoner level. That's kind of how we approach it, if that makes sense.
Well, with prison life, he became a paranormal investigator. That's what happened. So.
Yeah. So like I said, that was a great investigation for us. And that's really what we do. Like as going back to the trigger items and that respect that we were talking about, when we know we have children, we'll take toys and candy and blow balloons and the typical things that are trigger items there. And when we went to the Ma Barker house, which you mentioned earlier, that was the shootout between the Ma Barker gang and the FBI. So we took bullets, we took cash, we always carry weapons on us. So we had our guns there. We let them see our guns. And so that's the type of trigger items that we'll use there.
I really want to talk about the Ma Barker house, not just because it's in Central Florida and I could easily drive to it, as could you, but the video about it that you created, told the story of them so well. And this is something that you see in a movie. It's literally Ma Barker supporting her four degenerate sons who are all open criminals. And not only did they rob people, then they get into kidnapping. They're successful at it, by the way. They're getting hundreds of thousands of dollars for kidnapping, you know, wealthy individuals and then giving them back for getting the money. But it all ends in a shootout in 1935. And you got to go to this house, and you mentioned the house is completely on its own lot. And you were the first group to go in and do this investigation. So please tell us, like, I think if you love the paranormal, you also love history. So please tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the interesting story behind this is just our personal connection first is my dad actually grew up about 6 miles from this house. It's on Lake Weir. It's in Central Florida in a small town called Ocklawaha. And my grandparents, you know, they lived there. So when we stayed with my grandparents and we would go into Ocklawaha, they would always say, you know, that's where the Ma Barker shooting was. That's where the FBI, that they killed Ma Barker. And this was in, you know, the early 1980s. So I knew about the history of the house from an early age. But then we got to do that deep dive when we did the paranormal investigation there. So the house was built in the early 1930s. Again, it's on Lake Weir in Central Florida. You've got to go back a little ways and really understand the social and political construct of America at that time. So in 1929, you've got the Great Depression starting. In 1920, you've got Prohibition starting. And so that really led to the rise of organized criminals as well as gangsters. And so the organized criminals, what they did is they actually formed these coalitions, if you will, with law enforcement. They said, you know, we will pledge not to commit any crimes in your cities in exchange for a kickback if you don't arrest us when we come. So they formed these alliances with law enforcement. So that was organized crime. So then you have these bank robbers and gangsters that are taking advantage of that. And the Ma Barker gang was one of them. So you have Ma Barker and her four sons, Freddie, Herman, Lloyd, and Doc. And they also had a guy in their group named Alvin Karpus. So they formed the Barker Karpus gang. And they were crisscrossing the country, crisscrossing the Midwest, really robbing these banks and getting some pretty good funds from it, from those bank robberies. And then they escalated into killing. They were actually one of the most ruthless gangs of the 1920s and 1930s up into this point. So then, as you said, Johnny, they escalated into kidnapping. So in 1934, they kidnapped a guy by the name of William Hamm Jr., and he was a brewer. And so they got $100,000 from William Hamm Jr.'s kidnapping, and they released him. And so they figured that that was so lucrative that they decided to kidnap a guy by the name of Edward Bremer in the fall of 1934. And so they asked $200,000 ransom for Bremer. So they got the $200,000 ransom and they released him. But now you've got J. Edgar Hoover on the scene. And J. Edgar Hoover was obviously friends with the president, but Edward Bremer's dad was also friends with the president. So he told J. Edgar Hoover to go after the Ma Barker gang. And so J. Edgar Hoover had actually formalized the federal law enforcement at this time. So he has now the teeth to go after the Barker Karpus gang. So to get rid of the heat of the FBI, Ma and Fred Barker came down to Central Florida and they rented this house on Lake Weir, and that was built in 1930. And they just really, for all indications are, they really didn't make any waves to really hide themselves, but they rented it under the name of T.C. Blackburn. And so they rented the house, and then through their investigations, J. Edgar Hoover and his team tracked down Doc Barker in Chicago. And when they went through his papers, they found a letter that Ma had written from Central Florida referencing an alligator named Big Joe. So FBI came down to Central Florida and looked for an alligator, a lake that had an alligator named Big Joe. They ended up finding Lake Weir, and they ended up finding out that they found the hideout. So on January 16th, 1935, the FBI surrounded the house in the early morning hours. They yelled for Ma and Fred to come out. Ma and Fred said no, and they started the shootout. So the shootout is still the longest shootout in FBI history. It lasted over 4.5 hours. So the culmination of which resulted in Ma and Fred being killed. So that was the story behind that. And then the homeowners, they had the presence of mind to preserve the house as it was in 1935. So when you walk in now, there's bullet holes in the walls. There's bullet holes in the furniture. You know, it's the same sconces, the same pictures, the same hardwood floors. Everything's the same. The only difference is in 2016, Marion County, Florida bought the house from the family, and they floated it across Lake Weir and put it in the Kearney Island Recreation Center where it sits now. So it's on 40 acres, isolated. There's no power to it. There's no light pollution. There's no noise pollution. So when they moved it, I asked if I could be the first team to go in and investigate, and I was given permission to do so. And that's how we ended up being the team to investigate the Ma Barker house.
And before we get to what you found, if anyone's listening and they're wondering, what does Ma Barker look like? Just picture the mom from the Goonies or Throw Mama from the Train. It is a spitting image.
It's spitting image, yes. That's right.
Can I just say that if I were in a different life and I were more of a terrible person, I would have absolutely like graffitied "see you later, alligator" on their house, like after finding out that that's how it happened. Terrible. I know. I'm the worst.
To be brought down by an alligator.
Yeah. Let that be a lesson to you.
Now I'm never going to make an alligator mad at this point.
That's actually really good detective work, though, because back then we didn't have social media. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have technology. You had to go off of what you found. And for them to see a letter and, you know, from Central Florida talking about Big Joe the alligator, that's really good at putting the pieces together. And I know you, I watched the video, a lot of good evidence and reactions. At one point, I was blown away when you said, "Can you say Blackburn?" And 5 seconds later, Blackburn. Like,
Exactly. So to follow up on the investigation part of it. So what we did is, again, I asked if we could be the first team to do that. So in January of 2019, what I wanted to do was actually go in on the night of the anniversary of the shootout. So the anniversary, again, happened. The shootout happened on January 16th. So it was a two-part investigation. We set up our equipment on the night of January the 15th, and we let it run stationary alone in that house until 11 a.m. on the morning of the 16th. And that encompassed the hours of the shootout 84 years prior. So we locked all of our equipment in. We left the house. You know, I can validate that you have to have a key to get into the gate. You've got to have a four-wheel drive vehicle to get down into the sand to get to this house. So I know that nobody approached that house that night. And again, there's no power in the house. So I can verify that there's no, you know, electronic pollution, noise pollution, light pollution, none of that exists in the house today. So we set up that equipment. And after we went to retrieve it, we listened to the footage, and we were capturing things. We were capturing a male's voice that said, "Get out." We had chairs scraping against the floor or a drawer closing. And then one of the most compelling pieces that we had was on one of the stationary video cameras up in the room, which I call the kill room, where Mom Fred's body was found. Right around about 5:30, which is when the shootout would have started, we captured an EVP of two voices. The first one said "Freddy," the next one said "Yeah, Ma," and the first one said "Get ready," which I think is a residual haunting. I think it's a residual EVP that we captured in that moment. And so that was extremely compelling from just the stationary equipment standpoint. So then 2 weeks later, my twin and I, we went back and we stayed the night in the house, and we had the spirit box that you mentioned. We had our REM pod, we had our K2s that were going off. And so the first thing that we did is we set the REM pod in the middle of the kill room. And again, we backed off. And so we started actually having a great REM pod session with saying, you know, "Freddie, are you here?" It would go off. "Now, can you step back? Ma, are you here?" It went off, and, you know, step back and all of that. So that was very entertaining for us. And then, you know, we had the spirit box, and we were down in the living room for the first session. And I said, and I had never said the name Alvin Karpus. I said Alvin, and Alvin Karpus was one of the gang members. I said the name Alvin, and the spirit box said Alvin Karpus. It came through, which was kind of interesting to me. And then when we went up into the kill room, we had the spirit box running, and I said, "What happened in this room?" And the spirit box said, "They murdered us. We the ones dead." And then I said, "Can you say the name Blackburn?" And immediately it says Blackburn came through the spirit box. So again, that's very compelling when you couple that. And that's really what we like to do when we couple different pieces of equipment to validate, you know, the other pieces of equipment. That to us is extremely compelling and unexplainable. Because when you look at where the house is sitting, and I'm sure if y'all all have a spirit box or have seen a spirit box, it's not, the range is not that great. And so for a radio station to be saying Blackburn, the moment I ask it to say Blackburn, those odds are astronomical. When you have a full phrase come through the spirit box, such as "They murdered us, we the ones dead," again, I can't explain that because it's sweeping so fast through the frequencies. So for us, it was an extremely compelling investigation.
spirit boxes are definitely tricky because I've seen so many times where it just, it never works out in an investigation. But some of the most compelling pieces that I've experienced have been with a spirit box. And so it's really interesting because, you know, tend to not like them, but there have been a few times where I'm just like, all right, I can't actually argue the spirit box this time, because sometimes they come up with something where you're like, okay, like this was way too legitimate to actually put away, and it's something I really should look into. So
well, that's like, that's the thing about, you know, like coming into an investigation with a slight bit of skepticism and making this an actual legitimate science like you guys are doing with comparing different, you know, types of equipment and not just solely relying on one source. And I think that's basically the best way to investigate, right? You know, not 100% putting all your faith in one thing.
Exactly. And thank
you. Putting all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, exactly.
And thank you for acknowledging that, because that is what we want to do. You know, if I were to just go in and say, okay, we had a couple K2 hits, you know, that's cool. That's compelling. Can't really explain it. But when I've got a K2 going off with a REM pod, going off with a spirit box, we've captured some light anomalies and some EVPs. Now I'm building my case, and I'm building my case in a very, you know, I think interesting way that I'm saying I controlled for all the environmental factors. I know what they are. So I know that that's not what's acting upon this. And when I come away with these pieces of compelling evidence, that to me is something that I can't explain. You know, very rarely will we say that it's haunted. We just say we can't explain it. If somebody wants to come to me and say, hey, let's talk about this, and you know, I think it was this, perfect. I want to have that dialogue with you because I don't think I know it all. And if we can come up with a way that you can show me how this was, you know, captured or what manipulated this, perfect. Then that way I know to control for it later. But when we go in, and like I said, I can absolutely verify the environmental factors at the Mall Barker house that night. And these are the things that I can't explain. To me, that's extremely compelling.
And on top of the Mall Barker house, which, you know, compelling evidence and just a fascinating video to watch, you mentioned that Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary and Fort Mifflin may have been two of your absolute favorites. So maybe highlight a couple of things that really stood out there.
Sure, absolutely. And I do want to add the old Gilchrist County Jail into that as well. So I'd say those are my top three. Fort Mifflin was extremely compelling to us because, again, it's that Revolutionary War fort. You've just got that tactile history. You know, you can run your hands down the walls of the bricks that were there that saw the Revolutionary War battle. So that was a very interesting one to us because of the EVPs that we captured that were very germane to the location. It not only was it used in the Revolutionary War, but also the Civil War, where they had Union and Confederate prisoners in these casemates. So in one of the casemates, we went in and I asked the question, who's your president? And we captured a male voice saying Lincoln. And that, again, is extremely compelling. The first time we captured a shadow figure was at Fort Mifflin. Again, we returned to casemate 11, which I spoke about earlier, which is that subterranean casemate. And as I mentioned before, we had the night vision video camera and a laser grid in front of that camera. So, and that's the only way in and out of this little room. So if something were to step over it, you would have seen it. But during the night when nobody else was around, we captured a shadow figure that crossed from right to left, and it crossed all of the beams of the laser grid. And one of the docents actually told me that they showed it to Grant and Jason, and they were extremely impressed with that piece of evidence. So that was our first shadow figure, which was awesome for us. Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, we've had the opportunity to investigate twice. And that one, it just ran the gamut of things that we couldn't explain that night. We had a stationary night vision video camera set up on our first investigation in one of the cell blocks. And throughout the night, rocks were just being thrown at this camera. It went on for about 3 hours, just things were. And so I put a montage together of, and that's one of the reports that, you know, that there's rocks from unexplained places. And all through the night, this thing was being pelted with rocks, which was interesting. You know, we captured footsteps in rooms that we weren't there, very compelling EVPs. The second time that we went, we actually were doing a collaboration with Miranda Young from Ghost Biker Explorations. And so it was myself, my twin Jenny, Kim, our investigator Kim, and then Miranda and her camera guy. So there's only five of us on the property that night. And we were sitting in the gymnasium And we had set up a REM pod. We set up a couple of light glow-in-the-dark balloons. And we were probably about 15 feet from, so we were in a semicircle, about 15 feet from all of the equipment. We just were having it sit there in the middle of the gymnasium. And Miranda had an SLS camera. I saw a shadow figure run across and cut, from my line of view, cut off all of the lights on the REM pod and the balloons. And I said, did anybody see that? And Miranda said, I just mapped something on the REM pod. And it just so happens, Josh, her camera guy, had a camera on that SLS. So as I'm saying it, you can see this thing manifest on the SLS camera. And so I said, did anybody see that? So when Josh pans his camera up, immediately it crossed back again. And I'm like, holy shit, there it went again. So you can actually see this thing run across in front of the REM pod and cut off the lights as it runs past, which is very compelling. So Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary to us is one of those places that it needs to be on a bucket list if you're a paranormal investigator, just for the magnitude of evidence that we captured. But I'll say, in terms of what I would call the most pure investigation, if I could use that word, it would have to be the old Gilchrist County Jail in Trenton, Florida, which is about an hour's west of Gainesville. And this is a small prison. It was built in 1928. It was in operation until 1968. It just has 8 cells. It's a two-story building, but it only has 8 cells, 4 on the bottom, 4 on the top. And then it has a small jailer's house that's connected to it by a doorway. So this location, it's not in the greatest of areas. So when we were going to investigate, the owner said, I was with Miranda, again, from Ghost Biker Exploration. She and I were the only two females, the only two people on this location that night. So again, it was a collaboration investigation. And the owner said, do y'all carry? And we're like, yes, we both carry. We both have handguns. And she said, I highly recommend you carry your guns with you at all times during the night, because that's the location that we're in. So we said, that's fine. You know, so we put our guns on us and, you know, we had them concealed. When we first walked in to do the day tour, again, it was just she and I, and we were capturing male voices behind us. We captured them on camera. And but when we went in to really set up our equipment and do the night investigation, we weren't capturing really anything. It seemed kind of still. So Miranda said, I wonder if they think we're law enforcement. So we decided to put our guns down on one of the cots to let them know we're not law enforcement. So we put our hands up. We said, we're not law enforcement. So I put my gun on the cot. And as Miranda put her gun on the cot, she says, I'm putting this down nice and easy. And right behind us, a male says, good. And we captured that, and then the night was on. We were capturing things on the REM pod, the SLS camera. We were seeing shadow figures, EVPs all during the night, doors slamming during the night. And so again, that to me, that investigation was so amazing, because we had names on the names that we weren't told during the tour. We had names on the obelisk that we were comparing to the REM pod, which was giving us positive results, spirit box activity, K2 activity, SLS activity, and then we're also capturing shadow figures and EVPs on our voice recorders.
Can I just, want to say, sure, this in general. One, thank you. Knowing that you have a PhD, knowing that a lot of your team, you know, has a PhD, and the fact that you guys are so willing to humanize these spirits, and a lot of people don't. A lot of people see this as an adventure or something fun, but you're humanizing them and you're giving them a chance to speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. And obviously, having a PhD, you're incredibly logical. And so you're giving this field a chance by doing things like this, because you're using a scientific method. You're using ways to humanize, you know, these spirits that are going through whatever they're going through. And it's I love everyone that we've ever had on the show. They're all amazing, but like, it's refreshing to have someone like you on the show, because it just, you feel like you really care about this, you know, with the history, humanizing them, using science. Like it's really great and it's really important. And I really hope that if anybody is listening and people that are amateur investigators that want to go into this, like, hear this episode and really take home and focus on everything that is being said by Christy right now, because this is what paranormal investigating should be about and should have always been about from the beginning. And I want to know what happens after we pass away. I want to know what happens to my loved ones when we pass away. And knowing that somebody 50 years from now might be investigating a family member of mine, like I want it to be as respectful as you are doing it. So thank you.
Well, thank you. That means so much coming from you. I really do appreciate that. And I'm glad that it shows, because that is what we're attempting to do. You know, as I said before, you know, we came into this knowing that we're in this subculture. Because when you tell somebody you are a paranormal investigator, they either look at you like you have three heads, or they want to tell you their ghost story. And, you know, because yep. I think the approach.
Or both.
Or both. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm not obviously going to disparage any other teams, because everybody has their style and that's fine. But for us, you're right. We wanted that professional look. You know, when we go to these locations, we'll take a day tour first. We all wear a polo shirts. You know, we don't have ripped jeans. We don't have sweaty sweatshirts on or something like that, because we feel we're already fighting that negative stereotype. So if we can elevate that and talk intelligently about what we're doing, we can probably hopefully sway some people to say, to think that maybe, you know, this is something legitimate, that they may actually have something here. You know, I'm not going to say we don't have critics. We have critics. We have cynics that will approach us. And my response to that is, I'm not trying to convince you. My job is not to convince you. My job is to put forth compelling evidence that may make you think or open your mind a little bit that something is going to happen after this. And that's what I feel is my job. You know, it's like trying to convince somebody that my religion is correct. I know I'm not going to do that. But what I can say is, watch our videos. Here's the case that I put forward. And if that can allow you to think outside the box a little bit, that maybe there is something after that, that's fine. If you still want to be a skeptic, if you still want to be a cynic, hey, that's fine too. I'm not trying to convince you.
Do you feel a little bit more pressure to be professional as a all-female paranormal investigating group? Like, do you feel like the pressure to be a little bit more like legit, like a little bit more, you know, polished? Or
not so much pressured, and that's a great question. Not so much pressured, I would say, but it's just a standard that we hold for ourselves. You know, we've always been kind of like we always hold ourselves to that higher standard, every member of the group, and we're all very strong women. So I feel that it's just something that we said, okay, this is our look, this is what we're going to go with. And it started from everything. I mean, from our logo. You know, I had it designed by a professional tattoo artist. Our theme music, I had that by a professional composer. Because I just felt, you know, if I'm going to do this and we're going to do it in a legitimate fashion, I wanted to have it that legitimate look to bring forward, you know, like I said, that professionalism. So I don't feel so much pressured by others, but it's more the standard that we hold for ourselves.
And I think to put a button on everything, you know, Ashley, you mentioned that we all want to know what happens after we leave. And then you mentioned, yeah, there's always cynics, there's always critics. I think because a lot of the people who are critical of, say, those of us who are fascinated with the paranormal, who work in the industry, is because they want things to be black and white. Well, there's nothing about this that is black and white. For example, some people want to believe if you're a good person, you're going right to heaven. If you're a bad person, you're going right to hell. Well, then if that's the case, why is homeboy from the Aryan Nation still hanging out watching Days of Our Lives in a prison? Like, that's right. The kind of stuff that is just going to make someone's mind explode if they want to think simply. That's why, like, none of us can really be offended when people are critical or people want to judge those of us that love the paranormal, because they refuse to allow themselves to think any further, I think.
And I think you're absolutely right. And I think for us, it does hold some different facets as well. Again, we are that all female team, and I'll put forward, we all are Christians. So we do have that belief, but in my mind, the paranormal explorations that we've been doing has strengthened my belief, has strengthened the fact that I know that there's an afterlife, that something is coming after this. You know, and if I can, again, put that forward and allow people to open their minds a little bit, then I feel that that's the job I've done. I mean, that's what I'm here to do.
This has been awesome. Usually we do Supernatural Scoop. Usually we do a phone call. There's no need for either one of those today, because you have been such a phenomenal guest. Gosh, everyone go to soulsistersparanormal.com. It is such an amazing website. It's so informative. There's so many awesome videos. So Christy, this has been a true blast.
Thank you, Johnny. I appreciate that. And Ashley and Anastasia, thank you all for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
Well, where can everyone find, obviously we already said the website, but where, anything else that you would want people to know, future investigations or any other social media platform?
Well, we have had the opportunity to go on 3 investigations this year, even with COVID. So we will be releasing some more videos, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. Our website is www.soulsistersparanormal.com. We're also on YouTube under Soul Sisters Paranormal. And also we're very active on Facebook under Soul Sisters Paranormal.
Ashley Trobe.
I'm at Ashley Trobe on everything. And Anastasia's making her face.
No, it's because my cat just literally rolled in her sleep off my desk and fell. I was just like, all right. Sorry.
But yeah, I'm at Ashley Trobe on everything. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of it. Twitter, I'm really funny on Twitter, just so everybody knows. I'm the half part of the 2.5 comedians on the show, so...
You can find me. You can find me at Anastasia W on Twitter, at Anastasia Wash on Instagram, Anastasia TV if you want to watch some comedy. I'm also on TikTok while it's still alive, Anastasia W, for some of my impressions as well.
Oh,
I love it. We are at Haunts and Hops on all social media platforms. I'm at Jake Quasto. If you happen to be listening right now, I am in Louisville this weekend at the Caravan Comedy Club, September 10th through 12th. I'd love to see you out there. We'll talk paranormal stories as well. But with that said, of course, download at Tavor. Use the code HAUNTS10. Get yourself $10 towards your first crate of delicious craft beer. And with that said, tell some friends about the show. Go to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, rate us, review us. It helps us grow. As we mentioned, this is a subculture, and we want to be a well-known subculture because we like spreading the positivity when it comes to the paranormal industry, the paranormal world. So, and with that said, we will bid you a fond adieu, ladies.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Have a good night.
Okay, bye. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, tell a couple of friends and please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're listening on, especially if it's iTunes and Apple Podcasts. We appreciate you.